People will talk. Welcome to the latest episode of the El Arpa podcast. Joining me in El Estudio is Mary. ¿Cómo estás? How are you?
I'm very well. Muy bien. Thank you. Gracias.
That's good. I can explain that because as when we start recording, I don't really know what I'm going to say. So it just comes out like that. So
I never know what you're going to say either.
But that's the nature, I guess, of every conversation in the world. But I guess I should have opened by saying bonjour, ça va? Because the subject of today's podcast is a French speaker, a Belgian.
Okay.
Not connected to Tintin or waffles, but an artist that many of you might know as
Magritte.
A little bit louder, please.
Magritte.
Okay, very good. Okay, so if the name doesn't ring a bell, one of his most famous paintings will. So can you set the scene? Listener, close your eyes. You're going to go on an artistic journey here. I want florid descriptions. All right, 3, 2, 1. Go.
First, so it's like charades.
Well, not really, because I know the answer.
But the listeners don't.
Yeah.
A person with a bowler
charades
hat.
Charades on a podcast.
Shut up. Like you're...
Charades.
Sure. Yeah.
La-di-da.
A person with a bowler hat and an apple for a head.
Yes. That is exactly it. Google that after the podcast if you don't know. Actually, we'll put it in the picture of the podcast so you can see it when you log on to it. Anyway, so this painting was not there for a very specific reason, because this was like, you know, if Magritte was a musician, this is basically the album of B-sides and rarities. You know, we want to see, not quite like that, but, you know, we're taking out the most famous works to look at the other works so they can breed a little bit as well. Isn't that the case?
I'm not sure. Well, it said it was the biggest retrospective ever in Spain.
That's interesting. Were these pictures on loan from the Magritte house or something?
They were on loan from like different institutions. Yes, the Thyssen does this. We haven't said this. This was in the Thyssen Museum in Madrid. The Thyssen does this a lot. They just borrow really famous paintings. If you remember, a couple of years ago, we were in an Impressionism one, and there were lots of money from the Louvre.
Okay. I love how your voice level Always. Is going down. either you get
foreign words coming.
Yeah. It is a huge collection, and it's interesting because it has a connection to another exhibition that we have been to as well. Which was of this German photographer who was passing himself off as English.
Villarend.
Yes, and that was in
Mapfre.
The Mapfre. It was in the Mapfre.
Yeah.
Because apart from taking photographs of London in the 40s, in the Second World War, and also having these photographs of servants and a lot of things happening in these pictures, and his pictures of World War II London, blitzed London, are beautiful in their own way, because maybe because of the quality of the camera and just the lighting, or the lack of lighting rather, because of the blackout, it has a magnetic quality to it. But he also took very famous photographs of very famous people. One of them was Picasso. He had to kind of sneak into the house with other people who had business with Picasso so he could take the shot. Picasso had been very resistant to working with him, but then once he was in the house, he was very friendly and gave loads of his time. And he also took the portrait of this Belgian painter, Magritte, as well. And he asked him to put an apple in front of his face. He refused, and his wife was not very happy either, because I think they had some engagement, and she was like watching the clock. We have to get out of here, come on. But he did take a picture of him as well. So, you know, Magritte has popped up in our cultural exploits relatively recently. So I know you also I still can't decide if you're a fan or not a fan, but you wanted to go to the exhibition because you had seen some of his paintings when you were in school.
That's right.
Tell me more.
Yes. Well, I think I've mentioned this before. In Spain, normally, or at least in my generation, maybe not so much now, but we used to study art history, and especially if you took like a humanities subjects, then to get into university, you had an exam where you had to identify a painting and, you know, who the author was, give the whole context and historical context, artistic context, all these things. Yeah, so at the time, I think artists like Magritte probably we saw very little of because we always run out of time. But then sometimes like they featured in the exam and things like that. And yeah, so I just wanted to revisit it and see what I thought of it as an adult.
And of course, teenagers, like when you're, you know, when you're 18, you're first starting drinking alcohol, you start off with cider and his most famous paintings of an apple. So was there some kind of connection there?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on. So seeing these paintings again, with your experienced eyes. what has changed in the intervening years and your you know, I mean, seeing them now, I mean, do they have a different quality? I know you couldn't really get deep into Magritte when you were younger. Now we kind of did because we spent a lot of time with them at the exhibition. You know, inevitably your perspective will shift and change. So can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Well, I think, first of all, there were many different types. And as you said at the beginning, you tend to just see the one of the apple is the most famous one, or the one of the pipe, or like this is not a pipe. And yeah, it just gets sort of like put into the surrealism category and bit of a reflection maybe on like, you know, the representation of an object is not the object itself. But just that, and there was so much more to it. Obviously, there was the pipe thing was hinted at in the first section, but that was only like one very small section of the whole thing. Then it was divided into concepts that I'd never seen before. I can't really remember exactly. I had to ask you this the last time and I need to ask you again. But one was about putting context out of... putting objects out of their usual context. And another one was about doing the other way around, kind of like...
putting objects in their context.
As in merging them with their surroundings.
Well, okay, so each room...
But I can't remember like the exact term that was used for that.
Well, for the purposes of this podcast, we'll call it merging because it probably was something like that because the different...
Mimetism.
Mimicry.
Mimicry, that's it.
What you said isn't the word.
Mimetismo in Spanish. Yeah, mimicry, that's it, mimicry.
Thank you for
sharing. I just made it up.
It's a merismo or something.
Mimetism.
Dublinis. Well, there are... Yeah, because in this exhibition, I think that is the... prevailing trends, the thread that goes from the moment you walk in to the moment you walk out, you know, it's the idea of things being, you know, out of their context. And very simply, in the first picture, is this is done, you mentioned the pipe, which, you know, I don't know if you've taken up a new habit since the last podcast, but it's a picture of a pipe, but the label says this is not a pipe. And this is repeated with other everyday objects as well. And it's such a simple thing, but it's amazing because your brain wants to correct it. You know, I think we have in ourselves innately a desire and impulse to order things, to classify. And when something is so obviously not right, it's jarring, and that's the intention behind it. The intentionality of this is to make it jarring. And it even has other images which don't play with the object and the text accompanying it, but it is something that's unfinished. So you know it's not there. You've seen that something is missing crucially. Like I think one of them was the legs were missing from an object, right? Like a bicycle. And basically, you know, by legs I mean wheel. And and you keep kind of looking to where the wheel should be, knowing you're not going to find it, but the impulse is to keep looking for it. So he's very creatively and knowingly playing with our psychology. And I know that's something as well that impressed you a lot as well.
Yes. Okay. So let's go back then to the bit about.
Don't try and make it like you're correcting me or something.
No, because I started talking about mimicry, but in the end, you have a point that either through words or no or without words is the same idea. It's the idea of like making your brain work and kind of like startle you a bit. In the one that you mentioned, for example, there were objects that were labeled, but they were labeled wrongly. So it's what you say, your brain is thinking there's something wrong here and trying to spot it. But then even in the ones that are out of context, you're still trying to work out what is going on. So I think we were having a discussion about whether, you know, there has to be a meaning for the painting, or there is, that's enough of a meaning, the fact that it's making you challenge your perception of the world.
Well, like most things with art, you have more to say?
No.
Okay. I think with Magritte it's yes and no, because he has gone on record saying that there's a mystery to his paintings, and where there is mystery, there is no truth, there is no meaning. For example, it is what it is, nothing more. That's probably intentionally muddying the waters a little bit, however, because a lot of his paintings reflect the view of a window, and if you're not literate in paintings like we are, a big thing in old paintings in the Renaissance and everything was to have the image in the painting appear like it's actually a window and you're actually seeing something that's in another room or outside where you are. And he's playing a lot with that. So that obviously shows that he's building on what's come before as well. Art is essentially, I guess, a conversation with what's come before as well and modifying it to create what will be the new wave. No, so in that sense, there is obviously tradition and things behind what he's saying and what he's doing. But on the surface, he will say, or he did say, that there is no meaning because it's just mystery, you know? So, again, if you ask an artist what they mean by a painting, they might have an answer, but maybe not. And I think there will never be a conclusive answer to it. And that's actually something that you mentioned in the exhibition for different paintings. You said, like, I've heard this theory about this, but I've also heard a competing theory, which goes to show that nobody really knows. Do you remember that part of the conversation?
I remember, because in the text that accompanied the exhibition, which, by the way, was pretty decent, which doesn't happen often because we're always complaining that the text doesn't add anything, but in this one it was actually good and explanatory. But there were two instances in which they said, you know, this has been, for example, this has been interpreted as based on like Freud and the interpretation of dreams. However, Magritte always distanced himself from psychoanalysis, for example. Or there was another bit of text as well where it said, well, so-and-so said it could be this, but Magritte said it actually wasn't, you know? So yeah, I do remember, because obviously I think sometimes artists sort of like play a bit and they don't want to give away their meanings, and they're like contrarian, or even it might have a meaning for themselves and then later on they change their mind about something and then they don't want to give it that meaning anymore. I suppose that's the same for the person that sees the painting. It might mean something. For example, the thing of the apple at the time didn't mean anything to me when I first saw it. As a younger person, I thought it was just like stupid. Yeah, why? Fine. Instead of a face, put an apple, you know? Mm-hmm. I didn't think of any of the implications of replacing something you expect to see and reflecting on perception, also what you're saying about like the window, the fact that a lot of the paintings, including that one with the apple for a face, it feels like you are in the painting, you know, so that person is in front of you, but it feels like you are inside, you're not looking at it, you're like in it, which is quite a peculiar thing.
It all is very subjective as well, of course, because we saw one painting in two very different ways. One, I saw it as a stage with a painted backdrop, and I was thinking, well, here's an example of something that's not surreal. But you're talking, well, that looks like an elevator suspended in the sky, and you could just like jump out.
I don't want to. I don't know what that says about the two of us.
One of us is disturbed. We won't name names. Yeah, and also there's a very interesting thing about the windows. Again, you can impose your own meaning on it that sounds great to you, and maybe somebody else won't see it. But for example, I said to you, I think you know which window where this one is going.
I do.
There's like a few ones with windows where the glass is broken, but it's still reflecting what it had been reflecting before it got broken. So I turned to you and I said,
You're smiling, smugly.
Well, now that I set it up, it's going to sound very banal, probably. But no, it's just like how the eye works as well. It's like about getting that chemical signal, and just, you know, it goes through our eye and goes through our brain. That's what we see, basically. You know, what we see is essentially just a series, a continuous movie, if you want to put it like that. I'm tapping into my inner blind boy now. And if the glass gets broken and still reflecting that, it's like, you know, your head might still be operational after it gets chopped off. So it's just like, you know,
there's a delay.
There's a delay, exactly. So, it hasn't realized yet that it's not reflecting it anymore. So like the residue of that's still kind of in the glass. And if anybody's still listening after that explanation, then I salute you.
It's true that's what it's all about. You know, reflecting on like how your brain perceives things, but also, and I think this is a very interesting aspect of things, it's kind of like related to like neuroscience. So actually how your brain captures things and how it processes them. So you are right, there is a delay between what we see, and so we never get to, there is a delay, but we never get to see what happens because our brain corrects it. So it's like what you said about the head being chopped off.
Oh yeah, and the head thing as well. Well, that's interesting because we've mentioned psychology. You mentioned neuroscience there as well. And I feel, I mentioned this to you as well, that in some of the paintings, there's just that you see the back of a man in a bowler hat as well. And he's in an urban and outside area, but the sky is a ceiling, essentially. So it also gives off this very dystopian sense. And I don't know if that's something that other people have spoken about with this artist, but there are some pictures that have that element to it as well. So maybe he's playing around with that also. I guess the only version of his... I mean, for example, there's some paintings that are very nice to look at, like Pisa, the Tower of Pisa being held up by a feather.
Yeah.
Yeah, you like that one, did you, or...?
I'd forgotten about it, but now you've just reminded me.
It's like, you know, yes, it is what it is. I don't know how we can interpret it or analyze it, really. And then there's other ones where you're painting, and it looks good visually, as in you can see his canvas, and what he's painting, it kind of forms part of what he's painting. So, like, what he's looking at. So, like, if there's like, a river, the river will flow through the canvas as well. And I think it's something that shows off his technical ability, but for me, it's probably the part of the exhibition that maybe spoke to me the least. Somebody else might say it was the most evocative for them. So I'm just curious to know what you thought about seeing those pictures as well.
I think, you know, that's aged badly, if you can use that expression, because it's something that has been done over a lot with photography, I think. So I think we're already probably, I think I told you at the time that probably back then it was something very original, but now we're sort of like saturated with this idea of making the canvas a part of the photo. So I think that's probably why it's not so striking for us. But there were another set of paintings related to that, mimetism, mimicry. I was there with this new word, which I think were very interesting because, and we shared a picture about this last week on our Instagram. it was kind of like shapes, for example, a dove. And inside it was filled with, as if you picked like a paint, you know, and use the fill tool, and it was filled.
Microsoft Paint.
I was gonna say, I'm gonna show my age again. It was filled with clouds, right? With a cloudy sky. So, you know, you look at it and it's like, oh, well, this is nice. You know, sometimes collage uses this thing, sort of like using a shape and then filling in with something that is not its real fill. But then I think there's something a lot more interesting to it, which is reflections. And in this picture that we shared, there was the accidental reflection, which we just noticed, the accidental reflection of a water bottle on the wall, but the bottle was blue and the reflection was still blue, which was very striking because normally, obviously, reflections don't tend to have color.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that immediately made me think of, yeah, this is actually like that shape that we saw, and it's filled with something else that is reflecting. And it's something that it might not happen with a pigeon because it's not flat. So that's why your brain is trying to work out, you know, why am I getting a three-dimensional reflection on a flat surface? Because that was only the silhouette of the pigeon. It wasn't, you know, a 3D pigeon. But essentially, it's the same idea. It's the idea that something can be filled in by the reflection of something else through light.
So, yes, in the exhibition, at the end, you have a shop. You can buy top-tier Magritte merchandise. But I did find out from you as well that every so often they have a sale of exhibitions gone by. So don't buy it now. Just wait a few weeks. Get some discount Magritte. Postcards or bookmarks or whatever. So I think that is more or less a wrap for today's podcast. So thank you very much for tuning into this another installment, another classic. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. All of these links will be in the description. So this is me saying good luck.
And me saying bye.